The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society. The Korea Society, in 2007, celebrating 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. The North Korean nuclear crisis has been defying resolution for years. However, the recent midterm elections in the U.S. and changes on the Korean Peninsula may finally break the impasse. What steps will it take to make progress at the renewed six-party talks? And what will a solution mean for the future of North Korea and the U.S. role in Northeast Asia? On November 21st, the Korea Society convened a panel of experts to address these questions. In part 4 of our 5-part series, Evans Revere, a longtime Korea expert on a State Department assignment to the Council on Foreign Relations, discussed the mobilization of world opinion that followed North Korea's nuclear test.
Evans, on to you.
Thank you, Don. Having that piece of background from Don reminds me that I should remind you that I'm here not in my capacity as an indiscreet U.S. diplomat today. I'm not here as a spokesman for the administration, although some of the views that I will share with you today will sound rather familiar to those of you who know me based on the hat that I often have worn over the last 3 decades or so. And I guess in the interest of full disclosure, I should say that there's another reason why I should avoid putting my U.S. diplomat hat on today. I've heard U.S. diplomats described today as appeasers, and since I was in the previous administration handling U.S. relations with both North and South Korea, I guess I fall into that category. But we've also been described today as hamstrung diplomats. I'm not feeling too hamstrung today, but I do try to be as diplomatic as I can be. But to my media colleagues who are in the audience today, let me assure you that I don't intend to make any headlines today, so you can put your pens down and go back and get some coffee and cookies. But I will share a few thoughts on some of the subjects that my colleagues have raised. First of all, let me just right off the bat thank Don and the Korea Society and also the Asia Society for putting on this forum today. It's extremely important, and I marvel at your ability to get an audience of folks filling up the room when people should be home basting turkeys or whatever one does 48 hours in advance of the event, but I'm extremely impressed. And this is a very timely conversation that we're having here today for a number of reasons that my colleagues here have mentioned, not the least of which is, of course, that it occurs just a few weeks in the aftermath of a really disturbing and revolutionary event, i.e. the test of a nuclear weapon by the DPRK, a test that was followed by an incredible mobilization of international sentiment in the hours and the days after that event, which resulted in a really unprecedented UN Security Council resolution 1718, which had a surprising amount of teeth in it, if you will. But also some surprising participation and sponsorship, which I'll talk a little bit more about. So this is a very timely event in that we're meeting today to discuss this very important subject in the aftermath of all these events. I think the message that I took away from what happened in the aftermath of that North Korean test was a very clear one, and that was that the international community was very deeply angered to, I think, an unprecedented degree by the step that the DPRK had taken in conducting this this test. And that anger, as I suggested, led to a very unprecedented reaction within the international community, and also, I think, to an unprecedented level of international cooperation. And that level of cooperation was nowhere greater than among the other 5 parties to the 6-party talks that we saw coming together to discuss what should be done in the aftermath of that test. but also unprecedented cooperation among the P5, the permanent five members of the UN Security Council, and other members of the Security Council. But I would particularly point out the role that that China played in this process, because it's really striking to anyone who's followed the relations between the PRC and its treaty ally, I should remind you, the DPRK, to see how far China has come in terms of changing what had been a very traditional position of not wanting to apply pressure and not wanting to engage in arm twisting. Twice in recent months, we've seen China, as I said, a treaty ally of the DPRK, vote to approve UN Security Council resolutions, one in the aftermath of the missile launch back in July, and the other one, of course, in the aftermath of the nuclear test. And China even introducing its own language for one of these resolutions that was particularly condemnatory of what the North had done. This is a significant step, and I think it underscores the degree of international, not only anger, but outrage that the North Korean test elicited. Obviously, the U.S. played a key role in the diplomacy that I referred to in the UN Security Council. And in other fora, but the U.S. was not alone in pressing very hard for action to be taken. As my colleague pointed out, Japan played a critical role, China as well. All played extremely important roles in putting pressure on the North Koreans. But let me point out that this pressure was not designed to bring about the collapse of the North Korean regime. I don't think we're so naive as to think that sanctions of the sort that we have been talking about are going to result in the near-term collapse of a regime that almost seems to thrive on adversity, and they do. But I think the measures that have been taken by the international community, both in the context of the UN Security Council and in other fora, and also through the PSI, Proliferation Security Initiative, are designed to emphasize to the North the downside of its behavior and the downside of continuing to behave in that fashion, all with an eye towards seeking to induce the DPRK to return to a diplomatic process that it itself had sponsored and urged on the international community. So one of the takeaways that I hope you will leave this room with is that there is a diplomatic process that the United States and all of the other players are committed to, and that is the path that we are on, and that is the proper path and the proper mechanism for trying to resolve this most sensitive and most difficult issue of North Korea's seeking a nuclear weapons capability. I mentioned at the outset that this forum was extremely timely. Let me suggest it's timely for another reason as well, in that it follows a surprising statement that came out of Pyongyang not too many days ago, and that is the North Koreans' indication that they were prepared to come back to the six-party talks. That, I think, was surprising news to a number of people who thought that missile tests followed by the nuclear test in October had meant that this process was ended. It has not. And I think that is encouraging that the North Koreans themselves have recognized that this process still remains something that they are interested in pursuing. I note on the blurb here talking about this program that we're supposed to be talking about signs of impending change. I would suggest that we've seen an indication of a real change, and that is a real change in North Korea's position in recent weeks. The previous position was that it would not return to the six-party talks, and that there has been a turnabout in that. And I think that I would join some of my colleagues here in expressing some cautious optimism that perhaps this is a signal that this very vital process has more than just a bit of breath left in it. I would suggest that North Korea's return to the talks is a result of a number of factors. I won't weight these, but let me just throw them out there for your consideration. I think first and foremost was the incredible solidarity that we saw in the international community. When you have even the likes of Iran in recent days expressing its concern about a North Korean nuclear weapons test, it tells you something about the level of concern that this generated, that this test generated out there in the international community. I'd also suggest that the coordination and cooperation that we had seen among the other five members of the six-party talks, there were differences, obviously. I would suggest that these differences were more differences of nuance rather than fundamental differences of goals and objectives. But there was an unprecedented coordination among those parties and consultation among those parties about what ought to be done to get the North Koreans back to the table. I mentioned earlier the steps, very important steps, taken by China in the political realm. You've all seen the reports suggesting that China's efforts vis-a-vis North Korea were not just limited to verbal or political exhortations, but there may have been some turning off of taps and spigots. I think this may also have played a significant role. And the North Koreans may indeed have felt themselves, as a result of financial measures current and perhaps other things coming down the pike, may have felt a sense of increased isolation and pressure. I would hope that the North Korean decision to come back to the table was also the result of a realization by the DPRK that dialogue with the other five parties, including the bilateral dialogue with the United States, that is both possible and has actually taken place, and I expect a lot more to take place in the context of the six-party talks, that this offers a real opportunity to reap some very important benefits if it is prepared to meet the international community halfway in terms of dealing with its nuclear weapons ambitions. We are now, needless to say, in an extremely delicate period in the run-up to a hoped-for reconvening of the six-party talks. I say this because it's still not clear how this next round is going to play out, and it could be rough. We don't know. A very senior North Korean told a group of visiting Americans not too long ago that North Korea was returning to those talks as a full-fledged nuclear weapons state. That remark is obviously an ominous one. And it explains why you've heard the United States, Japan, and others state very clearly that we are not prepared to accept North Korea as a nuclear weapons state. North Korea also, I should point out, told that same delegation that they remain committed to a non-nuclear Korean peninsula and to the September 19th, 2005 statement of principles that my colleagues have referred to here. That's the good news. That statement of principles, I think, is worthy of very, very careful consideration by all of us here, because I think it does paint a picture of what a resolution of this very difficult foreign policy crisis might look like. The statement of principles, as you may recall, has a whole range of elements in it. Economic assistance from the various parties to North Korea to help reinvigorate the DPRK's failing or even failed economy. Energy assistance to be provided to the North to make up for its severe deficiency of energy. Political normalization of diplomatic relations with all of the other parties, and that would, of course, include the United States of America. Full-fledged membership in the international community as a way of easing North Korea out of its isolation. And also, last and hardly least, is a path, as my colleague mentioned a few moments ago, to the formal end of Korean War hostilities, something that we have been seeking for the better part of five decades now. All of these things were pointed to by the President and others at the recent APEC summit in Hanoi, and various spokespersons have pointed to these things as a way of reminding the DPRK what's out there, reminding North Korea what's still on the table, despite the missile tests, despite the nuclear test. A road out of the corner in which they have painted themselves is there for them to take should they desire to. I'm supposed to say a few words about South Korea. I don't think it's really appropriate for me to be representing the South Korean view up here, other than to say much has been made of the differences between Washington and Seoul. And I would suggest, as I mentioned a few moments ago, that these are differences of degree or emphasis. They're not differences in fundamental goals or objectives here. South Korea sits on the border of a heavily armed DPRK that has a military capability that is not just in the nuclear and chemical and biological realms, but also in the conventional realms. And somebody who lived in Seoul, Korea, for the better part of 8 years, virtually all of the Seoul metropolitan area is within North Korean artillery range. There's a very good reason why our South Korean allies have a slightly different perspective on some of these issues. Let me close. I want to keep this as brief as possible by just throwing out five words for your consideration here, because I think these are the five words that are keys to how we should proceed, how we must proceed, and I hope how we will proceed in terms of resolving this issue. And the first word is diplomacy. That's the only way out of this. You look at the various options. So as one of my bosses used to say, Korea is the land of bad options. Well, of all of the options, diplomacy is the least bad, I would suggest. And there are no serious military options to resolve this, other than ones that are really too horrific to think about. And it's important that all of the parties, including, I would underscore, the DPRK, realize that diplomacy is the best mechanism to resolve the fix that we are all in. Second of all, I would suggest flexibility. A critical component of diplomacy is an important watchword as we move forward here. We'll need flexibility in resolving what has been one of the barriers to the North's return to the talks, and that is their insistence that we somehow resolve the financial measures that were imposed a few months back on them. But let me also suggest that the North is going to need to be flexible as well. In some very obvious areas, including its determination to pursue a nuclear weapons capability. The third word I would suggest is solidarity, because I think it's one of the things that's gotten us to where we are now in terms of having some prospect that these talks are going to restart. Solidarity not only among the five other members of the six-party talks, but solidarity among the members of the international community in sending a clear and consistent message to the North Koreans that their behavior is unacceptable to the international community. The fourth word I would suggest is commitment, a commitment by all of the parties to what is spelled out in the September 19, 2005 Statement of Principles. Those principles are not a resolution of this issue, but they are a path or an outline of a resolution. They are based on some very hard and tough negotiating that took place, and they're based on a lot of interaction between the United States and the DPRK and the other parties, not only in the context of the six-party talks, but going back several years. And the fifth word, which is no less important than any of the others that I will leave you with, and I will not need to define it any further, is patience. Thank you.
The opinions expressed in this forum do not necessarily reflect those of the Korea Society.
The proceeding was a production of the Korea Society. For more information on our programs, please visit www.koreasociety.org.